time for your weekly dose of nostalgia with the 80s and 90s Uncensored. I am Milo Denison.
And I'm Jamie Fenderson. And today we're going to talk about figure skating in the 80s and 90s. And to help us do that, we have our new buddy Ryan Stevens, who has a new book coming out called Sequins, Scandals, and Salchows, Figure Skating in the 1980s, which is an in-depth chronicle of figure skating in the 1980s, written specifically for knowledgeable fans of the sport. And he's going to help us talk about this today, because maybe he knows a little something about it. So welcome to the show, Ryan.
So excited to be here. Thank you for having me on. It's going to be a lot of fun to talk about skating in the 80s and 90s today, I think.
Yeah. Well, especially for us, like, I mean, I'll admit, I don't pay too much attention to figure skating. I don't know about Jamie, but like, so it'll be cool to learn, because that's one of the joys of doing this show, is we get to actually learn about stuff that we don't necessarily know a lot about. So start off, tell us about the book and, you know, what got you into figure skating and et cetera.
So I was a former competitive figure skater, and I judged for a while as well. Kind of left the sport and came back to it. And I've been writing about skating history for the past 10 years. That's what I do. And it's funny that your cutoff is really the year 2000. That's really my cutoff as well. That's kind of when I stop, at least with the research that I do. But it's such a wonderful time in the sport, the 80s and the 90s. So I think it was really appropriate that I, for my next book, that I chose to do a book about skating in the 80s. So, as you said, Sequins, Scandals, and Salchows is really a book that's more geared towards knowledgeable fans of the sport. But it's a coffee table picture book as well. So I think that anybody who they watch the Olympics every 4 years, they remembered certain things, and they have those memories, I think that they would get such a kick out of, you know, looking back through all those wonderful pictures and learning a thing or two as well. So yeah, it's I think it's going to be a fun book to put out.
This is kind of nostalgic for me too, because my grandmother, when I was a kid in the 80s, I mean, I was watching maybe more boxing with my grandpa, but she loved figure skating. And she used to keep track of it, and she used to like watch the Olympics, and she was big and like into Scott Hamilton, and she used to love this. So this is kind of a trip down memory lane for me. And even though I don't know too much about it, it is kind of a nostalgic thing for me.
Well, one thing I think I'd love to start off by sharing, and I think people really might find interesting, are just some facts about how big of a sport it really, really was at the time. I think it will surprise a lot of people. So the 1988 Olympics, that's when they had the Battle of the Carmens. It was two women, Katarina Venn, who was from East Germany, and Debbie Thomas, who was from the United States. Both chose the same piece of music. Mm-hmm. And that was such a big deal at the time. And it was this East versus West.
Oh, no, you didn't choose my music, bitch. Oh,
exactly. No, that's exactly what it was.
Like you show up with the same dress at the party. Like, oh no, you didn't, girl.
No, it was exactly like showing up with the same dress. That's exactly it. But 43 million people watched that. It had higher television shares than the Super Bowl the year before. In 1992, Olympic figure skating had the fifth highest rating of any sports broadcast in North America. And in 1994, when there was the whole Nancy Kerrigan, Tonya Harding debacle, which I'm sure we'll get into later on. That was watched by over 125 million people. Wow. To this day, that's more viewers than any presidential debate ever. So, I mean, this was a sport that was very much loved by people because it combined the athleticism with the artistry. And there really aren't many sports that do that. Mm-hmm. Really, I mean, I guess like to some degree you have like gymnastics, but they're not really performing to the music, but it's kind of there. But I mean, there's not many sports really do combine the music with the sports aspect. So it's really unique.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of talent people have in order to figure skate is amazing. I mean, I've done the skates rolling around in circle at a rink kind of thing, but to be able to the jumps and the landings and the like, you know, flipping each other up and all that, it's very impressive, and it probably doesn't get enough credit. as that it, but apparently it does because a lot of people are watching it.
Yeah, and it
It
is very
did. It
artistic,
did.
huh?
Not as
Like
much anymore.
it because how they glide too. It's a very they glide across the ice, and it's beautiful. It's very artistic. My grandmother was in love with this sport because of maybe not necessarily for its athleticism, but for its artistry. She thought it was just a beautiful sport, and it is.
Great entertainment. It honestly is. And that's what made it so popular, I think, certainly with television producers, because I mean, you put on the music, you get a rink, you give people their skates and you pay them, and then you've got a show. It's a lot, it really presents itself so well. It's easy to put on too. So, I mean, it's a from a television perspective, it's definitely a winner.
Why do you think it was so popular back then to where it is it now? Because when I, catch Olympics and stuff, it's not really, people aren't paying attention to that particular area. They pay more attention to Summer Olympics, Winter Olympics, maybe bobsledding and skiing and stuff. But to your kind of what you said, I do remember even as a kid, you'd see highlights in the news and it was us figure skating was very well pointed out, and people talked about it, but nobody talks about it anymore.
Well, a couple reasons. There's actually quite a few reasons, but I guess like the really short answer would be the fact that in 2002 at the Olympics there was a judging scandal, and rather than say we're going to get rid of all the bad judges, they said we're going to change the system to make it fair, which wasn't a bad thing. But the system they changed it to isn't particularly easy for the general public to understand. I mean, back in those days, you would see, 5.9, 6.0, and those were the scores, which anybody can understand when they're watching it, whether they know the sport or not. Now they've made it really quite complicated so that if you're not in the know, it's not really accessible to people or easily understandable to people. And the sport also hasn't really adapted. I mean, it doesn't have a presence on Netflix or Prime or streaming services, to draw in new fans. It's not getting a lot of television time, so the commentators don't really have time to tell those human interest stories, which is what really drew people in back in the days. They got to know these skaters. Now, where they might have got, 6 hours of coverage of the World Championships back in the day, in the 80s and 90s, now they say cram it into an hour, so they can show the winners, and that's pretty much it. They really can't talk about a lot else, even about much else. So a lot of factors, but it's just not as accessible to people.
That's a shame.
I want to ask a couple questions about the Battle of the Carmens. So, do they then not tell what their music is playing in advance? Like, I didn't realize that that was even a thing. Like, that, because I would imagine that's had to have happened multiple times throughout the history of figure skating, where people pick the same song potentially.
Oh, for sure. It does happen. I
Oh,
think it
okay.
was just unusual that like the two top,
I
it
see.
was just very unusual that the two top skaters at the time both chose that music. And they did it independently, but it was like really like Carmen. It was just like this popular classical piece of music that everybody skated to. It wasn't like they both picked this a really obscure song and they were trying to one up each other, but the media played it up that way. At the time, but
Yeah.
though they both independently picked it and they had really different takes on it, but it was kind of crazy to see people both pick the same piece of music at that level, I guess. So
And who won?
Katarina Witt won, Debbie Thomas was third. But
Third.
the skater who actually stole the show was actually a Canadian, and the Olympics were held in Canada. She actually beat them all in the free skate, but she was. In the earlier phases of the competition, she was behind, so she wasn't able to win the gold medal. She won the silver.
Okay.
But Liz Manley won the silver, and Debbie Thomas won the bronze.
How many different events will a figure skater participate in? Like, will they do like the singles and then the doubles and then like other th things? Or can you just be like, I'm just doing this one event?
Well, you kind of have to. I mean, you have to focus on either singles, pairs, or ice dance. Those are the three categories. But now they have a team competition. And it's not like they're all on the ice at the same time, but they just add up their individual scores, and then like Team USA will win or Team France will win. Like that's how it works. So usually they participate in two different categories of the Olympics now. But if you're gonna do Solo skating, or you're going to do pair skating or ice dancing. It's just so specialized, you can't focus on more than one thing. So
I see. Okay.
skaters usually pick one.
So I think
And
when
no,
go
go
ahead,
ahead, Jamie.
Milo.
No, go
Go
ahead.
ahead.
We're
No,
so
you
polite
go.
to each other. No, you go.
You go. No, we're like those crows, bro. Like those.
Totally. Well, another one I was reading about was the 84 Olympics with Brian Ossar and Ossar and Brian Botano. So I remember the name Brian Botano. Like, why do I remember his name? Like, what, why was he so famous that I now X number of years know who he is?
So Brian, that was actually in 1988 as well.
Okay.
That was in the men's event. They called that the Battle of the Bryans because they were both named Brian. So it was Brian Orser from Canada competing in Canada versus Brian Boitano from the United States. So they both had the same name, and it was also kind of perceived at the time because Brian Boitano, who was the American skater, had a Canadian choreographer, so that was another element of it. But it was the American Brian Boitano who ended up winning. And it was that they both skated very, very well, but it came down to like one jump, and he ended up winning in Canada. So that was to beat the Canadian in Canada was a big deal, but that was huge at the time. And everybody who followed skating kind of they were rooting for one or the other. You're either in one camp or the other. It was very much a USA versus Canada kind of a thing. Yeah.
Ryan, who are you rooting for?
Who was I rooting for?
Yeah.
I'm always going to root for the Canadians. I'm Canadian, so
Ryan's
yeah.
from Canada, by the
I'm
way.
from Canada. No, I'm from
You're
Canada.
from the
Canada.
Canadia. From Canadia.
The Canada.
That
Yeah.
sounded very dumb American just then, what I just said. I'm sorry about that.
All right, we did mention Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding. So we
Yeah.
can't do an episode about figure skating and not talk about the two of them. I saw the movie I, Tonya, if that helps.
Okay.
And even as someone who didn't pay that close of attention to figure skating, I know that story. So
Yeah.
tell us about the two of them for the two listeners that don't know who those people are.
All right. So, I mean, these were the two front runners in 1994 for the US figure skating team. And it's kind of funny that I think the first thing I'm going to say, like it was always kind of painted like Tonya Harding is white trash from Oregon, and Nancy Kerrigan comes from this privileged rich family. That was never true at all. They both came from working class families. So a lot about how the media kind of portrayed them wasn't exactly, it was very good versus bad, rich versus poor, and that wasn't really very true.
I definitely got the good versus bad out of it. I do remember Nancy being portrayed as like the good girl and Tanya being portrayed as kind of the bad girl.
Well, she kind of was,
Yeah,
but
turns out.
as it turns out, gosh, I mean, I that was huge at the time. Like, if you think about that was just when CNN was just really starting to become a thing, and that was the same year that like the O.J. Simpson trial. I think that happened maybe that was after that, but that was when CNN really started doing these big controversial stories with that they would focus on, and that was one of the first ones that was like that. And I mean, it was such huge news at the time, but I think with Tonya, like she was kind of the bad girl. She was definitely very extremely talented technically, as was Nancy for that matter. And I mean, so at the 1994 US Championships, they're both there practicing, and during a practice session, Nancy Kerrigan gets whacked on the leg with a baton. And if you've seen I, Tonya, you know the story. And it was just shocking at the time because nothing like that had ever happened in figure skating. And people were actually talking about, do we need bodyguards now? Because at first people didn't understand what had happened, or who was responsible. But the long and short of it is, I, Tonya, I think it was entertaining,
Yeah, probably not
but
very
it
accurate.
not super accurate. It was definitely revisionist history. And I don't think it was a bad thing. I actually really enjoyed the movie for what it was, but I think it definitely, like right after that, you see Tonya Harding, she's on, you know, she's doing the rounds in the talk show circuit, talking about how, still talking, you know, 20 years later about how she was completely innocent, and she's on Dancing with the Stars and blah, blah, blah. I mean, she's definitely a pretty iffy character, but tremendously talented. And I do feel that, I mean, I do think she had a tough life. And I do think she married someone who was not making choices that were in her best interest. That's for sure. But she was not a complete victim either.
Do you think she knew in advance of what he was going to do?
I do. In advance or during, I mean, that's my personal opinion.
Like,
I mean,
knew enough to be able to potentially prevent him from doing it and saying, no, do not do that.
I think she certainly knew enough about what was going on that even that I, if she couldn't prevent it from happening, she could have certainly spoken up immediately afterwards and
said, this is not my thing. I totally don't condone this action. It's not cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. And we haven't said it for those two people. Her, yeah. It was her husband, right?
It was her husband at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Husband. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And basically is the one that whacked Nancy Kerrigan.
He didn't whack her on the
knee. Sorry. Yeah. He hired somebody to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Sorry. My bad. Yeah. And then of course it came out that was him. Kerrigan still did manage to skate after this though.
She did. She managed to skate really, really well. And she won the silver medal. She actually won the short program, finished second overall. Tonya Harding didn't skate like terribly, but she certainly didn't skate well at all. But there was this whole debacle at those Olympics because she goes out there for her free skate. And, you know, and within like less than a minute, she had to stop her program and famously goes over the judges, sticks her skate right up on the boards to show that her lace broke. And here's a fun fact. Not once since then has anything like that ever happened. And Tonya Harding, over like the year before her dress broke, there was always something with her out of the norm. And yeah, so that was a thing. And it was terrible because the skater who was right after her ended up having to go on early and skated really badly as a result of that whole debacle. But I mean, you know, Tonya Harding was always up to, I mean, there was always something happening with her.
Yeah. But something that prevented her from being successful that wasn't under her control.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Oregon white trash going to be Oregon white trash. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Jamie knows about that, right, Jamie?
Are you from Oregon?
Yeah, originally, yeah.
That's amazing.
And I'm white trash too. So, and Tonya, we're tight. I understand her. Oh, I was gonna say, there's when you and I were emailing about hanging out with us, it was interesting because the 80s and 90s.com, the 80s and 90s uncensored. Our whole thing is we have a birthday. It's January 11th, and I told you about this when you emailed. I'm like, wow, I just recently sent an email magazine about things that happen on January 11th on our birthday. And so in our newsletter, I included this, like, hey, by the way, here's some things that happened in 90s figure skating. Oh, that's crazy, Ryan. You're contacting me not long after I sent this.
I must be psychic or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who knows? It's meant to
be. So on January 11th, in 1992, the U.S. Female Figure Skating Championship was won by Christy Yamaguchi.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We haven't mentioned her. She was huge as well. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about Christy.
So she was amazing. So was and is amazing. So Christy Yamaguchi won the gold medal at the 1992 Winter Olympics in Albertville. So that was the games in between the Calgary Games we talked about earlier and then the Lilyhammer Games 94 where Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan, when all that went down. But no, Christy was an amazing skater. She actually was a very accomplished pair skater, and she was doing pairs and singles at the same time, which I was saying isn't something that's very common. So she had to give up pairs, focus on singles, and then she won the gold medal in Albertville in 92. And she was the first Asian American skater to win a gold medal at both the world championships and the Olympics, which is a really important milestone. So super cool. She was in Stars on Ice for like a decade. after she won the Olympics. So definitely a household name as well. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I believe she was on the Wheaties box at one point, if I remember correctly.
Sports Illustrated on there. Yeah. She was on the cover in 1992. And then I also wrote about in 1998, a couple things happened. So U.S. Ladies Figure Skating Championship was won by Michelle Kwan, another Asian-American action going on there. And then the U.S. Male Figure Skating Championship was won by Todd Eldridge that same time. So I think the birthday of our project, of our endeavor, has some ties to figure skating because some interesting things happened on our birthday in the 92 and 98. People be winning some figure skating on our birthday.
Well, for sure. That's crazy. That's awesome.
Off the top of your head, who do you think won, or you might even know this, but if not, so since we're talking the 80s, who won more gold in figure skating? We had the 84 and 88 Olympics. Who won more gold? Russia, U.S.?
So 84 would have been, let me see, USA.
It's called the Soviet Union back then, by the way.
Yeah, Milo, Soviet Union. Haven't forgot. Yeah. So 84 was, it was USA, East Germany, Soviet Union, and England, and Great Britain. And in 88, it was the United States, East Germany, and the Soviet Union. So would have won both of the golds in Paris and Iceland. So of those Olympics, it actually would have been the Soviet Union. They would have won, they would have won three golds, and the U.S. would have won two golds. So yeah, in the Cold War, it would have been the Soviet Union that won that if you were just looking at the Olympics.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Soviet Union wins the Cold War.
Yeah.
Hey, but Canada per capita probably won more gold per capita if you look at it. So
no, Canada, we had like tons of great skaters in the 80s and 90s for sure. I mean, we had Brian Orser, we had Elizabeth Manley, we had Elvis Stoiko and Kirk Browning. So we had a lot of talent during that time as well.
Wasn't Elvis known for kind of his very flamboyant shows? Is that who I'm thinking of? Like,
so Elvis kind of like, he had a background in like martial arts. So a lot of like, and it was, that was something that was really different than no one else really done. So he was really into Kung Fu and martial arts. And he kind of brought that into his skating. So it was something kind of different. I
Canadian Kung Fu ice skating sounds, I know, awesome. Yeah,
he's still performing actually. So is crazy. He's actually going to be in Stars and Ice next month actually. So no, I mean he's pretty. I would not call him flamboyant. He's definitely more.
Well, maybe not flamboyant, but I remember him having very like his shows would really kind of stand out.
Showmanship.
Oh, for sure. You know, yeah,
for the show. Yeah, there you go. Showmanship's probably a better word.
No, he was a great skater.
So is it true then about Canadians, like, you know, they were born with a pair of ice skates kind of thing on their feet, like everybody skates there?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't think everybody, and probably not as much as, I don't think not as much as they used to, because I mean, back in the 80s and the 90s, there were no smartphones. There was no internet. You know, you watched what was on TV and you get out, you got involved and everybody had a sport or an activity that you got involved in. And the ice is just something that people gravitate to. And, you know, whether it's hockey or it's figure skating, speed skating, curling, I mean, those are all really popular sports here and that people get involved with. So, I mean, yeah. And people just take skating lessons when they're kids. I mean, Can Skate is huge here. The Learn to Skate program is still really popular here in Canada.
Do you still skate?
The last time I was on skates was the morning of New Year's Eve. And like, I love being out there, but I stopped competing in my last competition was 2001. So it's not one of those things. It's not like riding a bike. So it's like, I can't jump anymore. So it's not as fun to me, you know, but I still love going out. You know, I still love to go there once in a while.
Well, can you turn around and go backwards on your skates?
Yes, I can do that.
You can do better than we
there
can.
There you
then.
Go. Exactly.
Winning.
You're better
gold
than us.
I'll take it, brother.
Yep. All right. Before we wrap up, tell us again about the book. Where can people track you down? Social media? Where can they, you know, all that kind of that stuff?
Absolutely. So you can find me on, if you look up Skate Guard Blog, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, or X, I guess it's called now. You can find me on Instagram, YouTube, Threads. And my website's www.skateguardblog.com. And the book is called Sequin Scandals in Sao Cows, Figure Skating in the 1980s. It comes out in September, and you can pre-order it now at on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you like to shop for books.
Perfect. And of course, we'll throw links into the show notes so people can just go down there if they want. Thank you very much for joining us, Ryan. That was very informative, and I definitely appreciate it. I'm sure Jamie does as well. Listeners, you can always track us down at the80sand90s.com. We'd be happy for you to give us a review if you want, or share the show with your friends. And with that, we'll say we are out of here to fly to Canada, strap on some skates, and take some skating lessons from our new friend Ryan.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun.